This is Cyber Defense Radio with your host and cybersecurity expert, Gary Malefsky. Gary brings to you another globally recognized cybersecurity executive in the hot seat today.
I have the special honor and privilege today of having Michael Irwin. He is the Chief Information Security Officer and the VP of Tech Operations of Odyssey Logistics and Technology, standing or sitting in the hot seat today. And Michael, I'm just honored to have you here. And you guys have been in logistics for 20 years, from ocean, rail, chemical, metal, freight of any kind. There's a lot of supply chain attacks lately, and attacks against logistic companies like yourself. Tell us, how do you handle that?
So, I mean, we handle it in the same way a lot of organizations do. So prior to my stint here at Odyssey Logistics, I was in the media business for a long time. Many of the risks are the same. I mean, there's a little bit of a different approach that we have to take. A larger percentage of our employees don't regularly engage with technology in their day-to-day job. We have roles of people that's not really their top focus. And when you think about common risks, social engineering or best practices related to password security, as an example, those might be a little bit less common to those individuals. And so education, everybody always talks about the importance of education and knowledge awareness, and it's even more important in that area. But the real takeaway, right, is security risk is largely agnostic to industry. So it's closer to a one size fits all model than not, right? Much of the equipment is the same, the human risk is the same, the threat actor's approach is the same in a lot of ways, but the impact to the world may be a little bit different. We work with a lot of customers that you might not recognize by name, but the products they move are certainly household names. They're certainly things that if that disruption hit your shelves, you would know, right? And so that's an important and really a responsibility that we don't take lightly.
Are the cyber criminals focusing ransomware on you guys more than anything? Are they doing, you know, live off the land attacks, waiting to cause an outage or the risk of logistics supply chain failures? Like, what are the bad guys attempting to do to you?
Yeah, I mean, ransomware definitely is the top item that are on people's minds, right? I would say, in my experience, the noisy risks, the noisy threats are less of a concern. Often when you deal with credential harvesting or you deal with session hijacking, things that are quieter, I mean, obviously behaviors of nation state actor groups, as an example, those quiet exposures into an environment, maybe the exfiltration of data, those sort of things are the ones that keep me up at night more than I would say ransomware does. Certainly we deal with ransomware as a threat in this industry, like everyone does. The logistics industry, I think, has a tendency to have a little bit more tech debt than some other businesses. It's very manual, people-centric processes in a lot of ways. And so some of the modernization efforts is really trying to reduce that risk. But there's really some common sense controls that any organization can put into place, and we do as well, to protect ourselves from that risk.
Now, Michael, I remember the Stuxnet attack going after a vulnerability in Siemens controllers and the logic array of the controllers. That's really intelligent cyber attacks. In OT, is it the same kind of issue where you've got gear that you know could move things, or you know cause a boat, like we saw that incident with the bridge where you know they're delivering goods, and are they becoming IoT or OT traveling data centers? Like, what kind of risk is there in OT that we should be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly can. I think often when you talk about that tech debt, the age of the infrastructure tends to be a bit older when you talk about historic kind of OT environments within organizations like ours. You deal with traditional controls that exist that maybe aren't supported in the same sort of way. The risk is definitely getting worse, or it's getting higher as we look to integrate all of these systems. So consolidation, pulling everything together, using data in a larger way, all of those sort of things to fuel the initiatives we're doing add risk to those environments. And so I think what you look for is really creativity. You start looking at segmentation of environments. You look at things that say, I can't protect this in the traditional way that I would like to, or the traditional way I would a standard kind of IT infrastructure asset. But what you can do is mitigate the risk, and you can protect yourself in creative ways. So I think it all comes back to awareness. There's generally kind of, not just in this sector, but many, there's a lack of understanding of what assets even exist, what technology assets there are, how they're interconnected, how they're relied upon by the business. And just having that awareness will let you make some appropriate decisions to really reduce the potential impact.
That's great advice. And I'm curious, you know, talking about understanding the data, Does AI have a fit in this situation? Can it help us? Can it harm us? Are the bad guys weaponizing it against logistics and supply chain companies like yours?
Yeah, it's funny you ask that. AI is a double-edged sword for people like me, people that are responsible for the security protection side of things, but also the IT operations availability side of things. To understand kind of the opportunity for AI, at least in Odyssey strategy, you need to understand some of the key value that we offer. So when we work with our customers, if you think about moving freight from point A to point B, you look at things like route planning, scheduling, warehouse and inventory management, sustainability. The secret really is that logistics is empowered by trucks and trains. It's powered by data. Our goal is to improve the quality of that data, centralize it, and really make better use of it. And I think that's where AI thrives. It's really used to provide a better experience to customers, a more thoughtful and more complete solution to our customers' needs. And I think that's really the space that can set us apart. When we have that focus on data quality, really the sky's the limit on opportunity for using AI. There's obviously the employee productivity improvements and things like that. But if I put my security hat on, I start thinking about social engineering schemes. I start thinking about how easy it is to trick people into thinking that something is legitimate when it's not. How can you manage risks like that, especially when you deal with, say, video or audio, kind of fake generation AI sort of stuff? How can employees reasonably protect themselves? So I think that's the area that keeps me up at night, not just the opportunity or the tech debt that might exist within a particular organization, but really how these tools are going to play out. So I think there's more to the picture than can rosy upside, but there is a lot of upside as well.
That's great to hear. And, you know, I was speaking to one of your peers, the Chief Information Security Officer of Scholastic, and he said, we're going to use AI to help do more training to students based on their own skill level. For example, if you know your students the next Picasso, you would definitely want them in a painting class. So the ability of AI to interface and share knowledge and information that's specific to that user, I think it's going to be awesome for things like phishing attacks, training against phishing. You know, each employee has kind of a different motivation on how they're going to learn and the lessons they'll learn and keep to protect against ransomware. All it takes is one click, no matter how well trained you are. So I think there's a great opportunity for AI to help us as well as it being weaponized.
Yeah, there absolutely is. And I mean, I think that's a great example that you give. I would say that some of that functionality exists today. So we don't need to look at AI as a far out future opportunity or something that maybe we're hoping that we get to eventually. The idea of using, again, underlying data in the right way to understand what people really in the knowledge space, to understand what people really need to know, what tests are they failing, what simulations do they struggle with, and then catering training directly to that in an automated way. There's a lot of tools that exist in the market that can help with that today. So I think the key here is not to look at AI as a whimsical potential in the future, but rather a practical tool or add-on to the things that we do every day. And I think when you take that approach, you really get value out of it rather than just kind of hoping for the best opportunity later on.
Absolutely. Now, the weaponization of AI in deep fake, I've heard that executives at companies like yours get targeted, or the admin might get a phone call from the CEO because they've tracked the CEO's phone and they know he or she is out of the office. And it sounds like the CEO, they're asking to move money, or they're asking to, you know, send a spreadsheet to a new board member with a Gmail account. And people fall for this all the time. So AI is being weaponized. How do we get ahead of these deepfakes?
Yeah, I mean, that sort of social engineering is a risk that exists today. It's not just a potential or an opportunity. There are cases that are reported on that speak to video conferences where you think you're looking at your C-suite. They're asking you to do something and you act on it, right? That's perfectly in line with the messaging that we might have provided to employees over the last several years about how to validate that something is true. Historically, you would look at traditional spoofing. Is the email address correct? Are you using things like DMARC or DKIM to validate that an email is actually who they say it is? Those things aren't necessarily adequate anymore on the surface. So I think particularly when you look at the risks of AI, it makes me think more about what sort of guidance can I provide? What sort of common sense, or is common sense wisdom even applicable anymore? And I think what it speaks to is really strong internal processes. When you say an executive will never ask for this thing, let's make sure that executive truly never asks for that thing. right? We need to make sure that our processes are consistent, our messaging is consistent, so employees know what to follow. And I think that's really where the best protection is. When you give somebody a clear path on what to do to be successful and say anything that you see that deviates from that, kind of put up the stop sign, halt what you're doing and ask for help, right? And I think that's really where the indicator is, because the technology will get to a place where the common sense approach, maybe not, it might not be good enough.
That's great advice. And you got me thinking about multi-factor authentication and trust but verify, right?
Yep.
You know, and the hackers and the cyber criminals, they've done things where they'll call up, you know, grandma and grandpa, and they'll play the voice recording of it. Sounds like their grandchild. And they'll say, you know, you got to wire me money, grandma, grandpa, it's an emergency, I'm in the hospital. But the one thing that when I've read these stories is the grandma and grandpa forget that they can call that child on their cell phone and say, was that really you? Are you okay? So, yeah. You know, all it takes is a little double check. So do you think multi-factor auth and kind of, are we on a zero trust journey? Like what's going to get us a step ahead of these kinds of threats?
It's funny. The one interesting thing with AI is it was the one thing that could really push zero trust out of the talking points, right? Because it's been such a hot button topic for so long. I think the point that you make is great, though, when you talk about even the dangers of social media and how that presents with social engineering. We think about internally to organizations, what you put on LinkedIn, right? You might be really proud of the achievements you've made, the projects you're working on, the colleagues that you have. Well, that information is often being weaponized, right? It's being used by bad actors to improve their social engineering campaigns. So when you do rely on things like multi-factor authentication, which we've already seen a lot of pivoting with, Microsoft doesn't natively support kind of TOTP SMS codes anymore in the same way that they used to, because it was easily compromised or phishable, so to speak. So when you talk about codes generated by mobile applications, you talk about hardware keys, things like that, it's really ever evolving, right? And so I think multi-factor authentication is as good as the trust that you have in the legitimacy of who's asking you to provide it. And I think previous methods in that space have obviously been compromised, but there is a lot of improvement left to have. But again, I think the key takeaway in that space is not that multi-factor authentication is not effective. Like that's not the message here, because the simple things are what many organizations can do to protect themselves. Having MFA on an account will undoubtedly protect you from a wide range of phishing attacks, credential theft, things of that nature. It's not perfect, but it helps a lot. And I think when people are too focused on the perfect solution, they really miss out on the progress that they could be making in the interim.
Again, great advice. Michael, as a chief information security officer, you know, you get hit with attacks every day. All it takes is one bad guy, one trusted insider to accidentally do something, click the link, get infected, whatever. Nothing's perfect. EDR we've seen in the news is not perfect. In fact, it may cause problems sometimes and outages. So we've got challenges in the software supply chain. We've got challenges in people's behavior. I'm just curious, when we talk about incident response, first off, I hope you'll agree with me. Don't you think when an incident occurs, the chief information security officer should be in the loop, talk to the board, talk to the lawyers, you know, talk to the team, the CEO, the CFO, get everybody involved and be protected in their job for at least 6 months, not, oh, let's blame it on the CISO. What are your thoughts on incident response and best practices and your role should an incident occur?
Yeah, so there, again, a great question. I mean, there's a wide range of activities that happen in incident response. So when we look at the initial notification, the initial response, maybe containment efforts, do I need to be involved in those or should I be immediately? Maybe not, right? I should be aware certainly very quickly, but my hope would be that you have a well-functioning team that can identify those things and they have pre-approval to act in the best interest of the business. There's nothing more important in incident response, in my opinion, than quick containment and fast response. And so when you look at, once you perform that containment, what do you do next? Absolutely, my role as a chief information security officer is to bridge that gap between the business, external customers, or things in that space with the technology and the technical effort that's happening behind the scenes. But really, I'm there to aid that incident response team. I'm there to get them access to the resources they need. I'm there to kind of run defense or a buffer from the rest of the business to give them the time to do their jobs. In those moments, I would hope that I'm not thinking about my own career or my own safety in an organization in that space. I certainly think CISOs have a tough job and one that they should be given some benefit of the doubt. But I also believe in the day that we're in, you can't say that definitively, right? There are some common sense metrics. There are common sense controls. There is proactive planning that can and should be done. And if you're leading a security program and you're not doing those things, that's a challenge. Like, that needs to be discussed, right? I mean, hopefully you have the resources that you need, but that is, it's certainly not a one size fits all in that sort of sense. So I think my role in incident response is critical to help guide the team and give them what they need to respond. But again, it's in support of them, not the other way around.
That's great. Again, creating an environment of trust and resilience, given security is never 100%. Michael, is there anything we haven't covered that you'd like to share with our viewers and listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I really just want to stress is the importance of IT in a strong cybersecurity program. We often look at what best practice says with the divide between IT and cybersecurity. We want them at equal levels. We want them to be separate from each other. They have different core objectives. But often if you look at IT operations, they can be in pursuit of the same goals. If you have a security-minded IT leader, that is a really effective value to an organization. If you have an IT-minded security leader, maybe not the same way, right? So I think the way that you look at it and the way that you leverage resources, when we're all talking about the need for additional funding, the need for additional resources, the ever-growing kind of need for more, right, in that sense, looking to how we creatively use the resources we have, how we can create cybersecurity incident response teams through subject matter experts in our own organization, not necessarily needing to be a standalone team. Like, there's a lot of opportunity to add value there. And I think when the business sees that value being added, when they see that efficient use of resources, they're more likely to support you on the things you truly do need, right? If we ask for everything, nothing's important, right, in that sense. So I think what we all need to do is think pragmatically and creatively about the resources we have. And I really would advocate to utilizing IT in that way in a larger capacity. I think it's good for everyone all around.
Michael, again, great advice. Michael Irwin, you are the Chief Information Security Officer and VP of Tech Operations of Odyssey Logistics and Technology, 20 years on logistics. We've got people like you keeping us one step ahead of the latest threat, and I want to thank you for joining the hot seat today, folks.
You've been listening to Cyber Defense Radio. Stay tuned next time for another amazing and informative episode. CyberDefenseRadio.com is proudly part of the Cyber Defense Media Group, where InfoSec knowledge is power.
Cyber Defense TV and Cyber Defense Radio have launched 24/7/365 live streams. Visit them online today at cyberdefense.tv and cyberdefense.radio. With your host and globally recognized cybersecurity expert and my good friend, Gary Milewski.